Well, there's
Alrighty.
A young woman we're thinking about.
It's yeah, a little after 5, so I'm going to call the meeting to order. And if I can get
a motion to approve the minutes.
I will make it.
Any discussion? Hearing none. Oh, wait, did we get it? Oh, you got a second. Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right. We will move right into resolutions then. We will start with Resolution 185, approving the execution of a contract in excess of $50,000, with Julia Dykeman. Oh, it's at Andrus Memorial with the Department of Social Services. Move for discussion?
Move.
Second?
Second.
Any discussion?
Want any discussion from the...
Yeah, sure, if you want to...
Sure, so this is a foster care services contract. You know, we typically set them up so that they send the children that they need to send there. I think $200,000 is fairly typical. These have these tranches, and sure. So for this tranche, this one is $200,000. It's a new foster care program that we haven't used in the past.
Mm-hmm.
Will this keep them in Ulster County?
I believe so. I'd have to just double check that.
Is this the kids that need really intensive care?
That I'm not sure.
Yes. I mean, this is similar to both the other resolution and the resolutions we had last year.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very intensive care. It's very expensive.
Yeah.
And the scope of services for this contract is very multiple caregivers per child type of intervention.
Right.
It's where a lot of the money gets spent in county government that you really don't realize.
Exactly.
Absolutely. Over a third of the budget.
I looked at it and thought, is there a way that we could do this some other way? And then I started thinking, no. You know, it's very difficult to do it any other way, right?
Yeah.
No.
It becomes even more expensive.
My mother is special ed aide in the Walk Hill Central School District right now in Plattekill. And at one point, they had 4 aides in one classroom with like 10 kids because multiple kids needed a one-on-one aide. You know, some of these children need really intensive services. And
this reminds me, there is a woman in my district who has a business, a nonprofit business in New York City, to create adaptive devices for children. A lot of her devices are made out of cardboard, pre-ply cardboard, and she's interested in trying to get that nonprofit established in an area outside of New York City, and so maybe we could invite her to come and present.
Sure.
She has a very lovely presentation about the differences this can make. It's primarily for motor disability rather than for cognitive or behavioral, which some of this is, but very exciting work that she's done.
Yeah.
Contracts
like this, I think a lot of people are often surprised that the expense of it, and for usually just a handful of children as well, or less, could be 3, and then numbers are astronomical. But it's the amount of treatment, the amount of
It's a service the state mandates that we provide.
No, absolutely. Yeah.
And it's a good service.
It is.
It is.
You know, but just as the reason that it's on the county taxpayers' dollar instead of the state taxpayers' dollar is because the state doesn't want it on their books.
Yeah. Well, it's about a third on these contracts.
Yep.
So.
I actually do have a question. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Why isn't social services doing that? I always get worried when we start farming out private entities. I've never heard of these folks. They're out of Yonkers, but you know, it runs into similar problems with the mental health and, you know, RSS, being that their corporate leaders make, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars a year. Are we not able to do this in-house?
This service, this foster care service? I know this is a specialized placement as far as there's not a lot of places in the area that offer the kind of care that these children need.
It's almost like an inpatient facility versus an outpatient facility.
Sure.
This is
the same situation you run into in school.
Yep.
There just isn't everybody who
just can't afford to have one room or whatever set up to handle one child. Until you get once you get a pile of them, then you can develop a program that will handle it.
I gotcha.
But you can't do it for one or two.
Okay.
So, anything else? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Hearing, all right. What are we? 186, which one was that? 25, okay. Resolution 186, approving execution of a contract amendment in excess of $50,000 with the St. Anne Institute. Move for discussion.
I'll move it.
Second.
Thank you. Discussion.
So we established this one at the lower tranche and have already expended the most, and so they anticipate for the rest of the year they needed to add this 152.
Anything else? Questions? Comments? Laura's squinting, I think.
I know.
Thinking something?
These contracts, these are amazing. I mean, they actually have a D and a F attachment, but these are for adults.
Late
adolescence. Hello. How's everyone doing? I'm Luke.
Hi,
I see we have the presentation up, and I wasn't here.
We decided to do resolutions first, and then you guys run afterwards.
It's the first time I've ever missed my own presentation.
No.
Okay, so do you want us to be out, or?
No.
I apologize. I hope I didn't interrupt anything.
We're good. I'll Google them later.
This is any child. No. Sorry, I thought I had the answer on the age range, but I didn't.
Maybe schedule A.
They do go beyond 16 in case that person is going out of foster care, and I think it's up to. I was going to say 21. Thought it was into the 20s.
But not intended for adults generally.
Right. Okay.
Right, I think the...
Booting them out of the system at 18.
I think the age is just to cover the transition.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
There.
Good. All right.
Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay. Very.
I can't vote anyway.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks, Mark.
Force of habit.
I can't vote anyway. So.
He's very tempted, though.
It happened. Right. You can vote.
It's muscle memory.
Yeah, it's a 12.
All right, well, we will get right into our presentation there.
You.
So,
it's 12 to 21.
We've got Mr.
I know you planned an abbreviated presentation, but
yes.
I've got the entire PowerPoint up if you want to go to it. That'd be great.
Can't get into
it.
Yeah, I won't go through all the slides, but I can put them on there, so y'all can check it out afterwards.
Jeez, it looks like a gift box.
It looks like a carton of cigarettes, yeah.
Carton of marijuana cigarettes.
All right.
I have one already.
Food.
Oh, yes.
Good information.
You were kind enough to mail one to me.
Looks like a starter kit.
Sheriff was here and very upset. I'm sure. We've gotten some very strange looks in the past training, so it's always fun. We had to verify with folks that it's not marijuana laced gummies in there.
We got chips and stuff in there.
Yeah,
Doritos.
No chips. That would be a good idea, but we'll do that for the next round.
Right. Yeah.
So, popular demand.
Gummy bears.
Great. So just so I'm spare on time, we have about 30 minutes, is that right? Or just kind of go with the flow?
We're good.
Okay, wonderful. Awesome. You all ready for me?
Absolutely.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much for making time for me today. I really appreciate it. And it's a real pleasure to be here. I'm from Colorado. And I was actually just looking out this window, and I was looking kind of through the town. What a beautiful town you all have.
I don't know if you've ever been to Aspen, Colorado, but it reminds me a lot of Aspen in many ways. Spectacular, beautiful town, and you know, actually, you actually have some mountains. I think ours might be a little taller, but
we do have a ski area
ski?
Up there.
Okay,
so.
Good. So not too far off then. Not too far off. And you know, it's really kind of cool for me. So I'm from Denver, Colorado. I was born in Chicago, but raised the vast majority of my life in Denver. And beautiful city, amazing mountain view. You know, since we legalized marijuana, I've noticed that aesthetic element, the beauty of my town has changed in a way that really has not been the same since legalization. So I want to chat with you all about kind of my experience personally and then also some of the data that we're seeing as well. But before I dive into that, okay, I want to talk about SAMHSA. So that's my organization, Smart Approaches to Marijuana. We're a 501c3 nonprofit. We're nonpartisan. We were co-founded by Dr. Kevin Sabet, a former senior drug policy advisor to the Obama administration, as well as the Clinton and Bush administrations. So he's actually, I think he's one of the few people to ever be appointed to both the Democrat and Republican White House. So it's kind of neat. And former Congressman Patrick Kennedy of the Kennedy family. So the two of them kind of came together, and you know, when Colorado legalized and Washington legalized in 2012. They thought, this is going to be big tobacco all over again. We've got to form an organization that puts science first. And so that's where SAM kind of came out. So we are, like I said, C3, we have two missions. One is we want to educate the public and decision makers on the latest science of marijuana. We want to reject reefer madness. We want to reject, you know, gateway drug, those kinds of things. We're not interested in digging up the past. We want to let the science lead the way. We've set up a scientific advisory board of people from Harvard, Princeton, and Yale, University of Colorado, who are doing live research with marijuana, actually as we speak right now. So we're very proud of that group, award-winning. Secondarily, we're a policy group. We want to look for public health-oriented policies. Our core value is public health. We think public health should outweigh profit when it comes to drug policy. And so, you know, certainly with marijuana, you're going to see that's a very important dynamic. We have collaborated with virtually every major medical society and association in the United States. You know, many of them look at this as an issue. It's a harmful drug. This is something that should not be encouraged in legalization. It's kind of a bridge too far for a lot of major medical associations out there. So we also have 30 affiliates in other states you know, as well. So we have kind of sister organizations. We have, you know, our C3, and then we have ACTION, which, you know, does our policy work, helps write legislation, those kinds of things. So if there's one thing you take away from our conversation today, I want you to take this away. It's the false dichotomy. Right now, when we talk about marijuana legalization, people think of this and talk about it like it's either you legalize marijuana wholesale, you know, sales, production, use, everything, or you throw people in prison. And there's no in between. And we reject that notion. We think that's a false dichotomy. That there are many other ways we can address marijuana policy that don't involve criminalizing people, but also don't involve commercializing. And when you legalize, commercializing is what you get. And we'll talk about that in just a minute. So, very important. In fact, we break this down into three different buckets. You know, so when you're talking about marijuana, the first question is, you know, do you think it should be criminalized? You know, and that is one topic of conversation, one bucket, so to speak. So, you know, do we think somebody should go to jail if they've got a joint in their pocket? Well, SAM doesn't think so. We actually argue for criminal justice reform. We've helped sponsor legislation in other states. We don't think people should go to jail for that. But that's one question. Then the second question is, do we think it has medical use? You know, medical marijuana. You know, should there be more research? You know, that is a separate bucket from the criminalization bucket. And I'll show you where I'm going with this in a second. But that is another question. Then the third bucket, keeps going out on me here.
It's the computer, sorry.
Oh, no worries. Yeah. So the third question is recreational. Do we think that marijuana should be legal for recreational use? You know, kind of, you know, products and, you know, marketing and all of that.
Hold on a second.
Hit enter.
It's the pro marijuana lobby that's
taking me out. That's what it is.
The screen mirroring.
That's it. I rest my case. I know. Projectors are always so much fun.
Tech support's outside.
Mm-hmm.
The screen mirroring went away, Jay.
TV's off.
Huh?
No, didn't hit them.
Yeah, I was gonna say I noticed the lights.
It ran nicely from where
sign.
You left it for us.
can't slow down.
Not much. So while that's charging up,
I
don't
Can I ask you a question about one of your earlier slides while we're waiting for that?
Yeah.
So you said you had collaborated with those groups. Have any of those groups endorsed your policies?
Yeah. So all of them have said we're opposed to legalization. You know, it's a harmful substance. And many of them work with us on decriminalization initiatives, or we've also helped sponsor legislation in Congress for more research into medical benefits. And so many of them have signed with us on those fronts as well. Yeah.
Given that you're from Colorado, and they legalized it, correct?
Yeah.
What is the employment rate there? Has that gone up over the last couple of years, or
the unemployment rate?
Yeah.
So the Colorado has one of the best unemployment rates in the country, but it had that before. You know, we've been constantly one of the top performing states from long before legalization. You know, that's, you know, there's a lot of dynamics in the country right now, but you know, Colorado has a rapidly growing population. A lot of people actually from New York are moving to Colorado because we have a lot of days of sunlight, which are wonderful. So I know that entices people over. You know, so there are some different dynamics there at that point. Yeah. Wow, that is so. Any other questions just while we're waiting? I can tell you that, so I'm raising a 2-year-old daughter in Denver, Colorado, with my lovely wife. And what inspired me to work on this issue and, you know, move my family, you know, 1,600 miles from Colorado to Washington, D.C., is this basically, you know, it got to the point where my wife and I, we would take our daughter down the stairs to take her for a walk in her stroller. And every time we take her for a walk in her stroller, she is just deluged in a cloud of secondhand marijuana smoke. And as parents, you know, we're walking down the side of the street, and it's becoming so prevalent. It's just happening so many times. And we thought to ourselves, my wife turned to me one day, and she said, I can't believe this is normal for any parent, you know, to go through. And I turned to her and I said, this shouldn't be. This shouldn't be normal. So that's why it's a passion for us. We want to share the information about it. You know, this doesn't mean that we need to, you know, stick our head in the sand and you know, treat it like it's the worst thing ever. But we do need to acknowledge the negative and harmful impacts that this drug does have. And the use is so prevalent now in Colorado, you really can't get away from that. That smell, that smoke, you can see it everywhere. What's really interesting is, in Colorado, there are 1,014 pot shops compared to 600 Starbucks and McDonald's combined. So that's almost twice as many.
But you're not saying that Denver and Colorado are the median or the norm on this, are you? I mean, they seem like an outlier.
They seem like an extreme outlier. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they certainly are representative sample, I would say. So, like, you know, Washington State is the only state that doesn't have that imbalance in terms of Starbucks, because Washington State's where Starbucks was invented. So, but all the I have a slide I'll show, but the other states do have this imbalance. They have a lot of pot shops, a lot of commercialization.
But
so
we still have what? How many states have legalized?
Eight
out of 50.
Yeah. So
they're providing for their citizens, but also
demand
of surrounding.
Yeah, certainly. Yeah,
like folks who drive up to Connecticut.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Is there any impact on the neighboring states?
Yes. Oh yeah. So Colorado is, you know, the number one exporter of black market marijuana in the country. California has 6 to 8 times the marijuana that they can consume as a state after 1 year of legalization sales. So they're producing a lot. You know, you have, so I don't know how many of you read the New York Times 2 weekends ago, but California Governor Gavin Newsom said black market's getting worse, not better. So, you know, he's actually engaged the National Guard to help with the black market growth. So that's a significant problem. So the black market, you know, when we were encouraged to legalize this in Colorado, and certainly we're seeing in other states, we're kind of promised a number of things. We're promised, you know, the black market's going to go away. We're promised, you know, we're going to get a lot of funding. Oh, great. Perfect.
We'll see how long it lasts.
Yes, we'll see.
But if it doesn't last, everyone's got it on their OneDrive,
and then
we can just
follow
follow along with the computer.
Yeah. Perfect. So hold that thought, I'll pick it up here a little bit. So these are three different buckets. You know, we have criminalization, medical, and recreational. And it's important we don't conflate these things. So, you know, I think often we'll hear, we should not be arresting people for having a joint in their pocket, so to speak. Let's legalize recreational marijuana. Well, those are two different buckets of conversation. We can talk about criminalization if that's a concern without necessarily having to legalize recreational marijuana. In the same way, if you think marijuana is a medicinal drug and we should have it for medicinal use, that also does not mean we need to legalize it for recreational use. We can talk about it from a medical perspective. So it's important we don't conflate these issues, and I think that's a really important point to make. So biggest story, I think, for marijuana policy so far in this budding, quote-unquote, industry is Altria. The owner of Philip Morris, the owner of Marlboro, has made now a more than $2 billion investment in the marijuana industry. Now, our logo has preventing another big tobacco under it, and it's had that for about 5 years. You know, that was before anything was official. But now, you know, we were thinking it was going to be the next big tobacco. Now it literally is big tobacco. So we have to know who the players. You know, Shakespeare, you know, says the world is a stage and we are the players. Marijuana policy is a stage. Big tobacco is a player. But we've also seen that Big Pharma is also a player. So Novartis is in this game. And this former CEO of Purdue Pharma, who wrote the playbook for OxyContin, went on to start a marijuana. So we've got major, major drug addiction for profit industries that are getting into this game. You know, Molson Coors, Constellation Brands, they put in now over $1 billion into the marijuana industry. So we've got major, major industries that are putting money into this. And you know, it's really important to note that we're not talking about hippies anymore. And I know this is Ulster County. We have Woodstock. Okay, this isn't the days of the Woodstock weed anymore. This isn't the days of the hippies and, you know, kind of the, you know, those joints back then were like 2-4% THC, you know, very, 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 very lightweight joints. Now we're talking about 99% potency. Mm. And it's not hippies anymore, it's guys in suits. Unfortunately, they look like me, but also they look there. And so it's just important we know, and this is not a stock broker, by the way, this is Privateer Holdings, the first cannabis hedge fund. So these guys have poured hundreds of millions of dollars into the industry. And it's worth a note, if you're going to put $100 million investment into an industry, you know, today people want a tenfold return. They want 10x, they call it, the 10x return. I started a company and sold it. So investors want 10 and tenfold return. How are you going to get a tenfold return on a $100 million investment? You got to sell a ton of weed, and you got to get a lot of people to start using it. And so that's a public health concern in our opinion. So why talk about pot during the opioid epidemic? I think a lot of people think, look, that is an emergency. We are, you know, this is a serious problem in our nation. 60,000 plus people are dying every year. Why talk about marijuana? Well, the research is telling us that folks who use marijuana regularly are more than 2.7 times more likely to go on to use opioids. Now, don't mistake what I'm saying here. I'm not saying it's a gateway drug. It is not a gateway drug. You're not going to smoke a joint and then pick up a needle and start injecting heroin right after that. That's not going to happen. But there is a link between marijuana use and opioids. It is not, certainly not substituting opioids, as we'll see in some other research. So we have to acknowledge that there is a link there for regular marijuana users. So how many of you have seen billboards like this? Anything from Weed Maps? No? Okay, good. I'm glad to hear that. But, you know, obviously it seems very encouraging. You know, states that legalized marijuana had 25% fewer opioid-related deaths. You know, they quote a JAMA research article. Of course, it's from Weed Maps, which is the Yelp for the pot industry, but, you know, it seems very believable.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say that's not per capita.
Yes, that would be correct. So this would be similar to saying this. States with ice cream eaters had more drowning deaths. What do we have here? It's an ecological fallacy. So there are a lot of variables at play in these states. It could be that legalization of marijuana, you know, was responsible for that reduction, but also could be that the medically assisted treatment programs were responsible for that reduction in opioid.
Wow.
Or other innovations in healthcare in those states were responsible. So there are a lot of things those states are doing to reduce opioid deaths, not just that. So what, you know, states with more ice cream eaters had 25% more drowning deaths. Maybe it's, you know, hotter states that had more pools, so more people are by the pools. So maybe that led to more deaths instead of eating ice cream. I don't know. It's possible. So, you know, we have basically the states were lumped together with highly restrictive and permissive states and some other issues that I pointed out as well. This is actually in Colorado, according to Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment. So from legalization, Colorado opioid-related overdose fatalities have actually gone up since legalization. Now, about this point, you may be saying, Luke, you just showed me a study that says it's going down. Now you're showing me a study that says it's going up. Who am I supposed to believe? Excellent question. The research is still out on this topic. So no one can say that this is going to reduce the opioid epidemic. That is irresponsible. Also, no one can say for the, you know, with scientific certainty that it's going to make it worse. We are still very much at a point where the science is still revealing what, you know, what the link is and how this is going to work out. But we're seeing studies that say it's not helping. We're seeing some studies that maybe say it does. It's important we kind of get away from these false promises and really look with a hard eye at science. JAMA also actually had an interesting research article that said the opioid crisis appears to be worsening where marijuana has legalized. That was from a 2018 JAMA article. So again, we're seeing mixed evidence. The point here is that, you know, this promise that it's going to go away is not true. Now, Lancet Journal of Psychiatry is probably one of the most foremost institutions on looking at marijuana use and its relation to the human brain. They had a study that just came out late last year that found that patients who used marijuana actually did not have better self-efficacy with their pain and actually needed opioids still after using marijuana. So that was a very significant study that was released. They released another one here that I'm going to talk about in a second. This was backed up by another study from the Journal of Addiction Medicine, found that actually medical marijuana users should be a target population for efforts to combat non-medical prescription drug use. So, you know, again, research is mixed here. Marijuana is not a panacea. We have a lot to learn. Cleveland Clinic actually won't prescribe medical marijuana, but I'm not going to touch too much on that. I want to talk about public health. So when you use marijuana, it hits receptors all throughout your brain. You have these cannabinoid receptors in your brain. Does that mean that you were naturally designed to use marijuana? No. It means you have receptors that are impacted when you use marijuana. And those receptors impact a whole lot of very vital functions of your body. You know, your immune system, your reproductive system, all things that are very important. So if you have a negative impact on those things, it has significant impact for your future. Now, one thing we do know is that there's a strong correlation between use of marijuana and psychosis. And there's some new research I'll talk about, but basically, especially if you're a youth user of marijuana, you are 3 to 4 times more likely to have schizophrenia or psychosis or even suicidal ideation. These things we're seeing actually in Colorado are the youth suicide rate is going up. We can't prove that that is directly caused by marijuana use, but again, we're seeing a spike in marijuana use in that those demographics where they're seeing increased suicides or attempts. This study just came out, and I think this is really important, so I really want you to pay attention to this. So the Lancet Journal of Psychiatry, again, the foremost institution on this, did a groundbreaking study on marijuana. It was the first population level study we've had. So they looked at the entire city of London, and what they found were two key findings. First of all, they found that regular users of high-potency marijuana, so that's the marijuana of today, not the low-potency marijuana of yesteryears, high-potency marijuana, are more than 5 times more likely to develop psychosis. 5 times more likely. Now, the interesting thing was they actually looked at, you know, for the weaker strains of marijuana from the 70s, those folks were only 3 times more likely, so that the potency appears to have a more damaging effect. Now, what's also interesting is they looked at what the treatment costs were across the entire city of London for these cases, and they found that if you removed those high-potency products from the market completely in London, you would reduce their treatment costs by 30% across the city. So, very significant findings. I strongly encourage you to look this up. This just came out last month. Very, very good study. So, you know, we hear, you know, safer than alcohol, let's treat it like alcohol. But when you look at, you know, alcohol, users as a benchmark to marijuana users, there are some things that maybe even could be considered worse. You know, cause serious problems, you know, homework and school. I think this is important. Try to limit use, but fail. Try to cut down, but fail. So, you know, we're told marijuana is not addictive. Well, it certainly has addictive properties. You can certainly be addicted to marijuana. You know, maybe it's not the same as heroin, but it is certainly addictive. So Colorado is the number one state in the country for first-time youth marijuana use for two years in a row, according to national surveys on drug use and health. 1 in 5 youth and 1 in 10 young adults have been diagnosed with cannabis use disorder in the last 12 months, you know, who are using marijuana. And we've seen increases to about 2% among 12 to 17-year-olds across legalized states for a monthly use, and about 3% increase for yearly use. So we are seeing an uptick in legalized state use of marijuana, which is concerning. So today's marijuana, we talked about this. If you hear marijuana, you're probably thinking about this joint, you're probably thinking about the Woodstock days, but gone are those days. These are the products now, and they're very, very highly potent. And this is not, Pop-Tarts, this is totally copyright infringement, but they're getting away with it. And this is not an extreme example. I didn't just, you know, Google this to try to find something scary. These products I can get right down the street from where I live now in Southeast Denver. So, you know, it's very, you know, these products, especially the Kush Colas, are very popular.
And sale is limited to 21 or older?
21 or older, But yeah, does this look like it's being marketed, though, to 21 young? That's the thing. It seems very attractive. And I'll tell you, our laws say, you know, no youth. You can't advertise it to youth. But you know, laws, and this is what I try to explain, is I don't think there's any legislator who wants youth to use, but laws that are laid with the best of intentions sometimes have very bad outcomes, even when we write them the best way that we can. So it's important to note that. So these are some of the ways they deliver the products. You know, Relax Row, it's just a blowtorch, and then, you know, magazine is just kind of crazy looking products here. Gummies and candies, you know, Keith Cat. So, I mean, just, it's just kind of great. So the potency, potency is going up. As we said, it's up to 99% now. What's really interesting is the International Journal of Drug Policy said that 97% THC levels, so that's nearly 30 to 40 times what the potency was just 30 years ago, are now more than 15% of the market. And 10 to 15%, which is still a lot more than what it was in Woodstock days, is only 2% of the market now. So the potency is the game. Much like big tobacco, which took relatively benign tobacco plants, you know, from, you know, that we've used for thousands of years without a cancer epidemic, you know, spun them with ammonia and other products, made them more addictive, more potent, mass produced them in cigarettes, which they invented, and then started a massive public health crisis for 100 years. So it's very kind of interesting how this is working. So you see this, again, I think a lot of us think of like a normal plant that's, you know, like kind of organic and mom and pop shops grown it, but now we're talking about labs that are creating, you know, very kind of crazy looking, you know, substances like wax and butane hash oil, which we've seen in the news. So it's all about industry. You know, kid-friendly products, potent, they're advertising it like crazy. You can't get away from it. Billboards and radio ads and, you know, every kind of, you know, colorful advertising that we can see. We're told, look, it's going to be safe and regulated, but we've had hundreds of thousands of recalls of products, especially in Colorado. And of course, they're fighting regulation, just like the big tobacco industry did. So what's the game plan, right? How many of you have been following the opioid crisis with Purdue Pharma and how, you know, they just got, you know, the guy just got convicted, Insys guy just got convicted? Well, the game plan is you get a drug legalized, or you, you know, you take it to market as a pharmaceutical company. It gets out to the market, you market it like crazy, you make a ton of money, you hire a ton of lobbyists, and you get regulations that work for you that don't protect the public, and you're able to make it more addictive, and you get it out to the public and get a ton of people addicted. And that's exactly the game plan that is going on here. They have the third biggest lobbying presence on the Hill in Colorado. And it's the same in other states that legalized as well. Tons of lobbyists. Now, what does that work out to? Again, Altria. So what does that work out to? Fighting regulation. Colorado legislature on Friday just passed a bill to give a complete exemption to the pot industry for the Clean Indoor Air Act. Let me say that again.
Wow.
They just granted an exemption to the pot industry from the Clean Indoor Air Act, explicitly.
And that act governs tobacco smoking?
Tobacco smoking. So now you can smoke pot in hotels, restaurants,
wow,
lounges, other indoor areas.
Wow.
And it's on Governor Polson's
desk. Those Colorado lawmakers must have been
high. It's crazy. It's crazy.
Maybe the lobbyists were handing out free samples of the Kip Kats or Rasta Reese's.
And I thought the same thing. I thought, like, well, why didn't, you know, I thought, okay, if they want to have lounges, why wouldn't they make it edibles? Well, the reason why is because edibles take longer to metabolize and get the high. Smoking it gets you high much faster. So they want that high immediately. So what the lobby immediately starts saying is, we need to have places to congregate to use this. And so they make a very effective argument. And when you've got the highest paid, best lobbyists in your door every day saying, we need this, we need this, we need this, it's very hard to say no. I will just say that. So again, big tobacco. Now, how many of you are familiar with Juul? Vaping.
Yeah.
Okay. So Juul owns 73% of the market of vaping in this country. 73% of the market. Okay. FDA cracked down on them because they huge spike in youth use. It's just almost an epidemic now. 1 week after they made that $2 billion investment, Altria did, in the marijuana industry, $14 billion investment in Juul. Now, why do you think that is? They have the supply.
And the delivery system.
And the delivery system. This lady's smart. No wonder you're in the position you're in. So
I had introduced a bill to regulate, to raise the age on teen smoking.
Thank you. Thank you. That's a service to the community. What Juul's doing is outrageous. So supply, delivery mechanism of the future, and global supply chain of big tobacco, a multinational company that can push this out everywhere that you go. So it's very, very concerning. So history of Juul I won't get into. You know, these are their marijuana vaporizers, Pax Era. Advertising that's clearly to kids. So here's the thing I really want to focus on, because I'm talking about industry here, and this is why it matters. Alcohol industry, 75% of their profits are made from 10% of their users. In that cohort, the average user drinks 10 alcoholic drinks a day. Okay, so the money they're making is from the heaviest users. That's their business model in alcohol. How's it working out in Colorado's pot industry? 22% of the users are making about 70% of the profits. Very heavy users. Very heavy users. So these are pot shops that I see every day as I'm driving around Denver. What'd you say?
At Tumbleweed.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, Tumbleweed. They have the best names, I'll tell you that. But these are the kinds of pot shops that you'll see around your town if you let them in. And what we're seeing again is this kind of industry overreach. You know, 70% of pot shops were caught recommending pot to pregnant mothers in their first trimester in Colorado. This was done by Denver Health, one of our most prestigious nonprofit health systems in the state. This was a scientifically verified study they did. So very, very concerning. You know, you look at the American Academy of Pediatrics, they say, look, THC rinse your breast milk up to 6 days. They issued an advisory, please, pregnant mothers, don't do this, but we are seeing an increase in pregnant mothers using marijuana now, which is very, very concerning. So we did some things to kind of bring light to it that I won't touch on, but I want to hit on this report. So the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment does a yearly marijuana health report to kind of see how things are going. I won't touch on all this, but I will say we had a 400% increase in marijuana poisonings of children 0 to 9. You know, that's very young children ingesting edibles and they're going to the hospital. You know, tens of thousands of homes where kids are being either exposed to secondhand marijuana smoke or those edibles are not being stored properly. Now, as a parent, I have a 2-year-old daughter. I'm not at the stage yet, but a lot of my friends, they have kids who are older. They have to ask their kids' friends' parents, are there edibles in your home? Are they stored properly? You know, those kinds of questions that parents just, I never wanted to have to ask, but that's going to be a question I have to ask if we continue to live there. So those are the kinds of things we have to think of, you know, on the ground. You know, there's a lot of normalization of marijuana use. Both these guys are good friends of mine. They're news anchors, but, you know, I guess I'll just point out this one. This is an Instagram post from about a month ago. He said, just bought some Girl Scout cookies outside a pot shop. You gotta love America. Now, let me tell you, that is a great business move on those Girl Scouts' part.
Yes.
But also...
they won the contest.
Yeah, they won the contest, I'm sure. But also, like, you know, really sad that, that it's that, you know, kind of normalized. You know, you just kind of hang out in front of pot shops as kids. So, this is what I was talking about. 1,014 pot shops to 600 Starbucks and McDonald's combined. As I said, Washington, they got a lot more Starbucks, not surprising. But Oregon, you know, you see a similar kind of number as well. So, commercialization, I talked about it. We see a lot of use. Yeah, seriously. THC cap. So we thought, you know, maybe it would make a lot of rational sense to cap the potency of marijuana in these legalized states. Like, maybe it shouldn't be 99%. Maybe we could all agree it should be 15 or 20 or 30 or whatever the percentage would be. Those THC caps have been killed every time. We've tried it twice. Limit on number and location of stores has failed in Denver. A lot of them are grandfathered in, so they're closer to schools. Money diverted to the general fund. So one thing that was really interesting was the Denver City Council had a initiative put to them that said, let's reduce the setbacks between pot consumption sites, so like pot lounges and bars, and between those and daycares and treatment facilities and parks from 1,000 feet to 500 feet. And it's like, well, we just legalized your whole industry 6 years ago, and you're already pushing to reduce those limits from 1,000 feet to 500 feet, and now you want to get rid of the Clean Indoor Act for your smoking? It's like, where are we going with this? And it all feels so eerily familiar to the big tobacco industry that we face. So, monitoring the future data, this is probably the second most respected study on drug use and behaviors and attitudes based out of Ann Arbor. They did a study across the country. 1 in 4 12th graders would try marijuana or increase their use if we legalized federally. So that's an impact. We have to think about that. Poison Control Center calls, that went way up. Many of you probably heard that. 200% increase in hospitalizations in Colorado since legalization for specifically marijuana-related diagnosis codes. So, whether it's ingestions, poisonings, et cetera.
People might not have gotten treatment prior to legalization.
Right. That's true. Yeah, certainly. A lot of this was adolescents under the age of 17, under the age of 9. And marijuana-impaired driving, that's obviously an issue. So, a brief summary, we had 151% increase in marijuana-impaired driving deaths in Colorado since legalization. This is as of last year. Washington State more than doubled since legalization, according to AAA. And in Oregon, according to AAA, 50% of all their drivers are testing positive for THC, or marijuana. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there is increased use. We can certainly acknowledge that. Traffic study, I won't talk about all this, but I will say, for everybody that they interviewed in this study by the Washington Traffic Control, they found that for everyone that admitted, they admitted to smoking like an hour before driving, so they're absolutely impaired. 64% of them said they stated they didn't think it impaired their driving. So we have a very serious education problem. A lot of people think that this is just a harmless drug, it's no problem. That certainly is what the industry wants people to think. And that's a challenge. It really is a challenge. Yeah.
And I think you mentioned in your letter, states that have legalized it also have higher auto insurance rates?
Yes. So, yeah, it's 50% higher on average for legalized states than non-legal states. Now, that's not, you know, we can't say, oh, it's exactly because of marijuana legalization. Like, Colorado has hail damage, for, you know, for example, which causes its price to be higher. But so when you average it across all the states that have legalized, they are willing to say that it certainly is a factor in it being higher.
Was there a marked increase when they legalized?
Yes, significant.
And also for business insurance.
Yeah, business insurance too.
Because you're seeing workplace incidents and impairments and dealing with workplace issues more. So we have in the legalized states also seen increases in business insurance.
Now, with that, I mean, obviously there's still businesses that test for that.
Yep.
People, because it's decriminalized, are they allowed to continue to work? Or?
So, I mean, that's a very tricky question. So, you know, you saw what the New York City Council did. Made it very difficult for most employers to test for marijuana now. They're pushing for that in Colorado, pushing for that in other states. So they kind of have two initiatives right now across the legalized states. The two big initiatives are, one, they want to get exemptions from the Clean Indoor Air Act because they want to be able to have smoke lounges, restaurants, and those kinds of things. Two is they want to make marijuana use a protected class. So in other words, you know, you can't test me for marijuana because it's a discriminatory practice, which has lasting impacts for a lot of employers. It's tricky. It's very tricky. So Quest Diagnostics, they do the tests for everybody. They just released this about 2 weeks ago. So every legalized state is up double digits, every single one. Oregon is the most significant, up 63% in workplace positivity tests for marijuana. So it's a positive. So that's significant. In general, 4% overall increase across the country, but double that in the safety-sensitive workforce. Now, that really kind of pricked my ears. I thought, what is safety-sensitive workforce? What does that mean? What defines that? So I looked into their press release. It's defined as pilots, rail, bus and truck drivers, workers in nuclear power plants. I mean, people you don't want using marijuana, certainly not, you know, the night before. Yeah, very concerned. So we're seeing more use, and we have to count those costs.
Stoned airplane pilot.
So obviously there's the absenteeism and, you know, workplace injuries. You know, there's some research on kind of regular marijuana users and that impact in the workforce, and that certainly exists. The number one construction employer in the state of Colorado, GE Johnson, their CEO said they can't find anybody to pass a drug test, so they're hiring people from out of state.
Wow.
So that obviously didn't go over very well in the state of Colorado. I think most people want to keep their jobs in state, for sure. Crime and justice. Now, I want to talk about this. Black market has significantly risen. I mentioned the New York Times article, so I'm not going to spend too much time on that. Oregon, 70% of their legal market is illegal. 70% of it. 70% of the market is black market. In fact, it's so bad that their Secretary of State just issued an audit about a month ago. Mm-hmm. Look it up. 3% of their pot shops have been inspected in the last 6 years. 3% of them. It's so bad that the Secretary of State said, and I quote, "Oregon's marijuana testing program cannot ensure that test results are reliable and products are safe." Very, very, very big problems going on in Oregon. Again, this industry is very difficult to keep up. Number one offense in public schools, by a long shot, it's not even close, 23%. Big problem in our school, our teachers are seeing the vaping especially. The vaping of marijuana is a huge problem because you can't smell it, you can't see it. There's a kid that was telling me a couple months ago, he said, "I was just vaping marijuana, getting high in class. The teacher had no idea." You know, that's what he's telling me. You know, teachers are scared. They don't know what to do about this, the technology.
So this statistic is that the children who are not legal to smoke are smoking, and so then they're getting arrested for smoking at underage.
That's correct. Yeah, I don't know if they're getting arrested, but like they're certainly getting, you know, cited at school. You know, it's an offense in school. Yeah. And this is from the Colorado Department of Public Safety.
There's also, though, they're seeing an uptick in incidents. There was just one actually at Bronx Science where They've got kids down New York City's most prestigious public school. There was just a violent incident where kids were beating up another kid. And these are kids that were smoked. They were vaping marijuana, so they were vaping. They were vaping the oil. So the incidents that are leading to suspensions, whether they're arrested or not, incidents that are connected to marijuana are going up.
So I want to spend some time on this because I think this is really important. Social justice. I think that's the number one reason we're hearing about legalization in New York is you know, the drug war. It's had an adverse impact on a lot of communities that it should have never had an impact on. You know, there are disproportionate arrest rates. There are disproportionate just, you know, attention of law enforcement on some of these different communities, and that's a problem. But what we found is in states that legalizing marijuana did not solve that problem. In fact, in Colorado, the arrest rate for African Americans is twice that of what it was for whites for marijuana offenses. And this was in their latest report from the Colorado Department of Public Safety. So the arrest rates have maintained their disproportionate level, if not gotten worse. On-site arrests, African Americans 21% more likely to be arrested on-site, more likely to be arrested without a warrant. You know, much, and all this, again, is related to marijuana arrests. So what does that mean? Legalizing marijuana is not going to solve the systemic and root issues that may exist out there. We need to, you know, the industry wants to legalize this from a commercialization perspective, and they're kind of dangling this idea of social justice. But what they don't want you to know is, remember the false dichotomy. We can solve some of these harms. You know, criminalization, incarceration, expungement, some of these other issues, we can solve those without allowing this industry to make a ton of money by putting shops in directly in these minority communities. But what do I mean by that? Here's a map of Denver. Everything green, I want to direct your attention here, everything green is Caucasian white communities. Everything that's a different color, so yellow and blue here, is a minority community. It is the city of Denver. Now, I want you to look at this. Every dot is a pot shop. Every dot. It's like a heat map. So the moral of the story here is, we all know where the liquor stores are. We all know where the tobacco stores are. We all know where the payday loan store is. And the pot shops are right next door to this.
You have this map in your pocket.
So tax revenue, we think, you know, people think this is going to make a lot of money. The reality is that it's a total drop in the bucket. And if you don't trust me, trust our former governor, Governor of Colorado, John Hickenlooper, who's now running for president. He says that don't legalize marijuana for the revenue. It's the drop in the bucket, end quote. And he's pro-legalization. He says legalize it, but he says don't do it for the money. And I think that's really important to know. Another guy, former California Governor Brown, says we never expected a windfall of money from legalization. So listen to the folks from legalized states, and they'll tell you, they may be in support of legalizing it, but they'll tell you don't do it for the money. That certainly is not a reason to do it. So you can tell, I mean, we're talking fractions of the state budget that we're looking at here. I mean, Colorado 0.70%, Washington 0.3%. The education money that we were promised in Colorado, that was a big part of the vote. Our teachers in Denver Public Schools went on a unanimous strike for the first time in 3 decades, just earlier this month, or last month. So, you know, didn't solve our budget problems. You have to look at the costs, too. So, look, I started a company. If I went to my board and I said, hey, guys, we just made $10 million in revenue, isn't that great? You know, they'd laugh me out of the place. They'd say, well, what was your cost of goods? What did it cost you to make that money? And so we can't have a conversation about revenues without first looking at the costs. So we did this in Connecticut. This is a projection. Now, you know, we took the rosiest estimates that the pro advocates had, and then what we did was we quantified what we could. So we looked at, you know, workplace injuries, you know, in legalized states, and just based on some of the research. Absenteeism costs, because there's a hard cost to being absent from work. We looked at, you know, the damage of these, you know, butane hash oil explosions, because, you know, people are trying to do that in their own home and it's blowing up homes and killing folks. You know, damaged vehicle costs, non-fatal injuries, drug driving fatalities, you know, obviously the administrative burden of regulating marijuana. So when you tally those costs together, you get a pretty significant number. Now, what we did was we didn't want to kind of come across like, oh, let's just make it as high of a cost as we could. So we took everything down by one third. So the numbers we came up with, we took it down by one third to be as conservative as we could. And this was the number we ended up at, was $216 million in costs versus $113 million in revenues. So we've done these cost studies in a couple other states. We looked at Illinois, we looked at Rhode Island, and we also looked at and Connecticut, and we also have a cost study on Colorado that I can share as well. So it's important we look at that. So, you know, I'm not going to touch on the election, but I don't think it's important, but basically there's a split. What I really want to talk about is public support. So many of you probably in this room think this is totally inevitable. It's a done deal. Everybody wants this. You know, Luke, you're in the wrong line of work. Move on to something else. And if you look at the polls, you might think that. You know, you see these polls that say 60, 70% support. You know, why would we fight this? Well, it's all about the way you ask the question. I want to draw your attention back to the false dichotomy. The false dichotomy says you're either legalizing this or you're going to throw everybody in jail. And if people are given those options, of course they want to legalize. Why not? I don't want to throw people in jail for smoking a joint. But if they know they have more options, their opinions tend to shift significantly. So, in New York, this was in December of 2017, there was a poll that came out from Emerson College, and it said, you know, do you think we should legalize marijuana? 60% of people said yes, because, you know, it's a straight-up yes and no false dichotomy question. So we went to Emerson, and we said, look, we're not going to pay you guys, but we think it'd be a really smart idea if you went back to those same respondents who took the same poll, ask them the same question, or give them four options. Keep the current policy of decriminalization, keep medical, repeal decriminalization, legalize marijuana, you know, for recreational use, or prohibit it completely. And when we did that, support for recreational marijuana fell to 40% from 60%. So majority of people wanted other options. So what does that tell us? People have complex views on this subject. They are not just a simple yes or no. Many people think maybe this is medicinal. They want to see it for medical, but you know, maybe not recreational. Some people say, look, I just don't think people should go to jail for this, but I definitely don't want a pot shop in my community. You know, people have complex views on this. We can't simplify it into, oh, they absolutely want Altria, you know, in next door and setting up a big shop. You know, I don't think people want that. So New Jersey, you know, many of you maybe have been following New Jersey and how they've rejected legalization for a year and a half now there. Very big pushback from the Legislative Black Caucus there, Senator Ron Rice. So FDU, Fairleigh Dickinson University, they are the, you know, one of the more respected pollsters in New Jersey. We went to them and we said, look, we're a small nonprofit, we don't got a lot of money, but we think it'd be a really good idea if you asked a question with four options, that same question. And she said, look, I'll do it. She said, but because we're the ones funding it, I'm running the results, whether they're good for you guys or not. We said, okay, fine. So they did. The results found that only 35% of New Jerseyans wanted recreational marijuana. All of them wanted medical or decrim. And so her quote, I thought, was great on this press release. Anyone who expected legalization to happen quickly and easily might reconsider given these findings. And legalization has not happened in New Jersey. So it was a really big stunner. Illinois was the most striking one. Only 23% of people in Illinois wanted legalization of marijuana when they were given options. So again, people have very complex views. So, you know, this is kind of just, I don't know why that's like that. But basically, to summarize what I talked about, we, you know, advocate for decriminalization, not commercialization. We advocate for science-based public awareness campaigns. We really want to get the data out. That just died. We have a yearly lessons learned report that we put out where we pull the data together from legalized states. We strongly believe in letting the data and science guide the discussion. We really want that to lead the way in this and not have kind of this industry-led discussion and, you know, kind of based on, you know, unfortunately, a lot of marketing. So that's our approach. Thank you for making time for me today. I'm happy to answer any questions that I can.
Yeah. On the revenue side of it, the governor, just so you have the background, the governor's rosiest projections in terms of state revenue for marijuana in this state is about $300 million, which is 0.72% of the state budget. And the current proposals right now direct very little, if any, money down to the county level. In terms of inspecting these pot shops and the regulatory regime, I would fully expect that if this were to pass, that you're going to see counties and local law enforcement have to pick up that cost. Any increases in treatment, social services, as you well know, are borne by counties, and then any augmentation of law enforcement, as you know, which is such a big driver of property taxes and local budgets, will also have to be compensated by that.
And so one thing I want to add on that for the treatment cost is we didn't add, some of you may have noticed, we didn't have treatment cost in our cost projection. It's because treatment costs are very hard to quantify. It is a significant cost, but it's very hard to nail down that number because of all the different downstream sources for that. So that is one thing we did not put in that cost report that we think has significant cost as well.
So the objectives that you have there are for a program that would decriminalize but not legalize.
So this is a rough outline of our congressional reform bill that we're pushing in Congress right now. So we are not a kind of quote unquote party of no. We're not here to stick our head in the sand and say keep everything as it is. It's going great. We don't think that. So we're pushing a federal alternative to legalization that involves decriminalization. It involves treatment, education, and prevention resources. And then we're really looking to kind of reduce the recidivism, and obviously we want to reduce drug use in this key as well. So this kind of outlining tenets of what we're pushing, and we're pretty close actually to being able to offer a bill in Congress. So.
Now the main tenet of that plan would be to decriminalize use, but not production and sale.
Yeah.
So, the folks who want to, grow some pot in their backyard and do it yourself, have at it.
Yeah, and that's our approach. It's like, look, if you're going to do it in your own home, that is your own business. I mean, we're not, we don't want to, be going into people's houses and throwing them in prison. We think that it should be discouraged because it is a public health problem. And having laws that discourage drug use is a public health win. If you look at drugs that are illegal versus the usage of the drugs that are legal, our legal drugs kill far more people than our illegal drugs do. By a long shot, hundreds of thousands of people are dying in this country from our legal drugs, not from our illegal drugs. So, from a public health perspective, having some sort of discouragement is good. Throwing people in prison, we don't think is the right way to go. But we really do want to discourage use, and we want to have science be out there. We can't have these claims that marijuana is harmless. We can't have 64.2% of people, who are using marijuana in Washington State thinking that it's not going to be marijuana. That's important.
Does your organization have a position on cannabidiol versus tetrahydrol?
Yeah, so we don't focus too much on CBD, but CBD was approved by the FDA. So it is an accepted medication for accepted medical uses, and we support those. Our concern is, there's kind of this wild west of products out there. There's a lot of companies that they're not regulated by the FDA. I don't know if you listened to Gottlieb's last hearing at the FDA, but he basically said, there's a lot of products out there. We don't know what's in them. If we spent time trying to regulate them, it would take up the entire resources of my staff. We can't really keep up with it. So, he basically made the comment, look, we're not going to crack the whip on these guys, but, buyer beware kind of thing. So that is what we say is, look, it's probably better if you can get a prescription from your doctor for this, for Epidiolex, which is the, pure CBD. It's regulated by science. We support that. We're a little concerned about the kind of wild west products. But,
possession would be legal.
Yes, a small
sales
possession. Yeah.
Sales would be still criminal.
Yes. Yep.
70% of the municipalities in Colorado have opted out, which is also something that not a lot of people appreciate. Folks don't want these pot shops all over their downtowns. And we're also seeing an opt-out movement in Massachusetts. And even in New Jersey.
More than 50% of the towns and municipalities in Massachusetts have banned it. So it's a big domestic. Yes, sir.
So again, you have people going to Massachusetts bringing it into our county and giving it to kids. There has to be some kind of criminalization for that as well.
Absolutely, yes. So, the decriminalization would only apply to on one's person, but you can't distribute it, sell it. Do any of those kinds of things.
But you buy it in mass and use it yourself.
Bring over state lines if you're caught.
Bring over state lines.
It's a federal crime.
Yeah. They can't do that. They are doing it, but they can't.
There's hundreds of New York state.
Well, I know. I'm from Colorado. We're shipping it to Nebraska and Wyoming and Kansas and, all the different states around. It's a very serious problem.
Laura had a question.
Yes, ma'am.
You brought up Massachusetts. I was at an ISAC meeting with Cheryl Spera, who said that. I believe she said or alluded to the fact that they regretted making it recreational. Are you seeing any of these states kind of going back and revisiting the laws?
So I was just talking to the Arapahoe County Commissioner. Now, Arapahoe County is one of the top five biggest counties in Colorado, and they have been fighting really hard to keep. So there are a lot of medical dispensaries in that county that are trying to flex to become recreational because you know, they're trying to just, you know, make more profit. And she, you know, she's fighting that with a lot of constituents. They're fighting that. They're trying to keep the medical, because a lot of folks are like, man, you know, I thought this was medical. I don't really like what it's become with recreational. So we are seeing a big rise, and especially with this latest bill to pass in the Colorado legislature, people are up in arms. It's very, yeah.
What do you want Ulster County to do? Anything?
Yeah, so so let me put it this way. I think that it's important that the counties stand for something that's scientifically based and grounded. I think that at the very least, we should be saying slow this process down and watch what goes on in these legal states, watch what happens in Colorado. We've only got 6 years of data. Remember what I said at the beginning? I said, I'm not going to tell you the gospel truth of this for a fact is helping the opioid crisis or this for a fact is not. I'm not going to tell you that we have the final answer on legalization. If in 20 years, youth use is rock bottom and there's drug driving fatalities go away, and when I take my daughter out on a walk, she's not buried in secondhand marijuana smoke, and all those things happen, I'm going to be the first one to say, well, you know what, maybe regulating it does make sense. But we don't know yet. And so my point to that is, I think we need to, as counties, be saying, let's slow this process down. Let's watch for the next few years to see what happens. Maybe opting out. Opting out is really a great way of sending a message to, I think, Albany to say, look, guys, we don't want to just let this industry in and let this just happen. So I think, at the very least, some sort of statement of we should go slow, I think, is helpful. If you really want to take up, take up the standard of this cause, opting out sends a very strong message, and I think would be helpful.
Of the states that you've studied, which may only be the five and not the eight or nine that it's...
Yeah, so we have a new report coming out in a couple weeks after that. Yeah.
Which do you think has done the introduction or legalization in a way that has minimized the social harm?
That's a great question. You know, I'm going to answer you honestly. I don't want you... I'm not going to give you spin. I will say that the legal states have... they've all had issues, a lot of issues. You know, no caps on potency. We have a lot of, big industry footprint. That is a problem. I will say that, there was an example I saw in New Mexico that did not pass it, but they were saying, look, we don't want big tobacco either. We don't want kind of this commercial industry. And so what they looked at was a model basically saying no corporate for-profit entities can be involved in this at all. It's going to be kind of publicly pushed, stores. Now, I think that presents problems of its own. However, if I had to pick my best evil, I would say that would probably be a better one. But I still think that there are better options, and our organization believes there are better options than the organization, but I will just give you a straight-up honest answer to a honest question.
And can you explain the boxes?
I probably should have talked about the boxes. So obviously the message here being that, big tobacco is involved. This is big tobacco 2.0. This industry is following the same playbook that we're talking about. So, supporting marijuana, let's decriminalize, don't legalize. So we're saying, look, we can talk about this criminalization issue, but remember from our buckets, we don't have to legalize recreational marijuana to get folks out of prison. So that's key. We have some stats from the CDC, talking about kind of the risk of, I talked about regular users of marijuana more likely to go on to, use opioids, lower your IQ points, so that kind of stuff. We talk about the big tobacco investment, which, obviously is important. And then on the back, we talk a lot about the social justice, because again, that is the number one message that is being sent out there. And we are all about social justice. In fact, one of our key team members said that if he actually saw the data of legalizing marijuana is addressing some of these social justice harms, he'd be the first person saying let's legalize it. But we're not seeing that in the data right now. We're not seeing that, the incarceration rates are not going down. Prison populations are going up in these legalized states. Not saying that it's because of marijuana, but marijuana hasn't reduced those populations. So it's just really important we point these things out. So we wanted to get, and all these facts are cited. They're coming from journalistic institutions, Denver Post, Yale University, places that, are credible. So we really try to stick with credible sources. We're not going to, www.weed.com and, weed is the devil's lettuce.org. We're not doing that kind of stuff. So we just think it's important to talk about this. And then obviously we have some quotes from the governors I talked about, the drop in the bucket. And we talked about kind of the percentage for New York. So we just think this does a good job of encapsulating what the industry looks like right now. And then also, we have some little sweets in here, which are not laced with marijuana. But, gummies, because gummies are a big thing. Let me tell you a story about gummies, okay? Washington State, their regulatory commission said, gummies, clearly targeted towards kids. Bad idea. Let's ban them. That was late last year. Right before they were about to pass the rule, the marijuana lobby got involved. Guess what rule was stricken from that bill before it was passed? So guess what's still on the market in Washington State? Gummies.
And you mean particularly THC gummies?
Yeah, THC gummies.
High potency.
Very high potency.
That's a corn syrup.
You know, Rice Krispie treats.
I thought that was harsh. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, and
going after gummies.
I'm a big fan. I'm a total optimist, and I believe in our ability to do great things. But I also look at history, and you know, my dad taught me, Luke, the one thing we learn from history is that we don't learn from history. And as I've gotten, you know, I've now spent about 2 years on this issue, and I've learned more and more about big tobacco and what happened there. And it just gives me goosebumps to look at what's happening with this. It feels like we're watching a car wreck happen all over again in slow motion. And I'm screaming, like, let's stop this, guys. Because if I could go back 100 years, you know, back and change what happened with big tobacco, I would, to save the millions of lives that are being lost from that. And we didn't know, but now we know. This is an industry we can look and say, we have an idea of how this is going to go. And I just feel like it is incumbent upon us, when we learn the truth and when we've seen what's happened in the past, we have to act on that. And that's why we are so passionate about fighting this here.
We have time for one more question.
Sure.
Yeah.
Please.
So we've seen a curve with tobacco.
Yep.
And we're now seeing declining tobacco use rates in at all age groups. Is, if we're going to learn a lesson from tobacco, is it possible that we can compress that historical curve? And yes, in places that are the alpha testers on this, you know, see these big problems. But I guess I feel... I'm actually trained in medicine, and 35 years ago, we were talking about trying to use marijuana for nausea with chemotherapy, which it clearly helps, and it helps best if you smoke it, and that is still not available across the United States, despite all kinds of good scientific research on it.
Yeah.
So I'm pressed from that side by the... you know, the aura of this being so terrible that it has prevented it from being used in situations that I think it is helpful. And so I think you're right that we all have to look at the data, but how do we use that data to get to where we are with tobacco? I mean, it does seem just totally outrageous to me that any lawmaker would put less restrictions on the use of marijuana than on tobacco. It occurred to me that anybody would consider doing that.
And the bills that are in Albany right now is the Wild West. There's no limits on potency. There's no limits on edibles.
One of the arguments I've heard a lot, Kathy, is that marijuana is actually safer than tobacco, which I think is an argument. There may be some validity to that. There may not be some validity to that. It may be that, you know, a marijuana joint is less harmful than a commercially produced cigarette with tobacco because of all the crap that they put in it, but there's nothing that says that all that crap isn't going to be put in commercially produced marijuana cigarettes. But I think that that's the kind of misunderstanding that would prompt state legislators to do that. Well, it's not as bad as tobacco, so it doesn't need as many regulations.
I think to your point, though, I think you made a very good point, which is, we started out so restrictive on this, and it was like the Reefer Madness thing, and it was like way over the top. And so now it's kind of like it's almost not credible to say, you know, we should. And so I think what we're experiencing is a reaction to something that I think is legitimate. It's a reaction to some poor science and poor, you know, work on education perspective, but it's an overreaction. It's like they were so wrong about this, now we've got to legalize the whole thing. Well, no, you know. There are some things we should do, but, you know, blanket legalization is too extreme. So I think you make a very fair point, and I think that's why people legitimately and understandably are saying, you know, they've been lying to us. We need to, let's do this, let's just do the whole thing. But I think that would be too far.
But that's what the industry, and that's
yeah.
what the
industry,
industry
wants.
Because at the end of the day, this is not going to be an industry that is just based on smelly joints. It's going to be an industry about specifically engineered products to make people go to the store and buy it often, and buy it for years. That's the way that they're going to perpetuate this industry.
Yeah.
And that stuff we're already seeing is 5 to 10 times more potent. And the studies that we are seeing on the mental, the mental and psychological, neurological impacts of that are really astonishing. When you're looking at the studies that are coming out linking the high potency use and long-term use to psychosis, suicide, schizophrenia, depression, people having people just having psychotic episodes in Europe. And there's a new study out of Amsterdam that they've had they've been working on for the last number of years. Just came out showing astonishing figures of people who use on a regular basis who are having psychotic episodes now. And again, you know, as all everybody here has a fiduciary responsibility in this county. You look at the cost, the fiscal impact of having to deal with a population that's going to require more, you know, more services, and so that's also part of the calculus here on whether or not we should be running headlong into this, or we should be as a state and as a community taking more time and doing more research. And I also just want to throw in that if the New York State Legislature decides that they want to do this, they will be the first legislature in the country to legalize and fully commercialize marijuana. No other state legislature has done that. It's been done through public referendum. So, you know, and again, just to the point that Luke made earlier about sending a message to the folks that are in your legislative delegation in Albany, to say, hey, there are a lot of issues here, there are a lot of costs, there are a lot of expenses, and we have a lot of concerns, you know, let's take our time. If you're not willing to say, you know, we think that we should opt out, then at least let's take our time, let's really look at the science, what this, what kind of fiscal and human impact this will have, and let's slow this train down.
Just imploring them to say, science first. Let's let public health and science lead this conversation. And let's look to these states. I think that's a sensible approach.
Maybe if I can offer a little bit of insight onto what the question that you had as to how somebody could actually, you know, a candidate or a lawmaker, you know, ignore all the facts and just go ahead. Some will argue that you take money out of politics.
Yeah.
You know, you have the big industry, you've got the tobacco industry, you've got the pharmaceutical industries. The ones who are hiring the best lobbyists who are filling the campaign coffers of candidates, and yeah, they get them elected and they do their bidding. They write the laws, the policies, and they, you know, ultimately deregulate or do whatever it is that, you know, those who you know, funding their campaigns ultimately. So yes,
we got another meeting coming in, so we should probably.
Yeah,
okay.
And I just think you made such a great point. And let me tell you, we don't have a PAC. We, you know, we are a small nonprofit. We do our work, you know, to the best of our ability. We try to use our budget as well as we can. We actually kind of had a crazy idea. We're like, let's go see if we can hire one of the biggest, you know, lobbying firms in D.C. Let's just see what that would even look like. We went through the top 10. Every single one of them was working for the pot industry. Said thanks, but no thanks.
Yeah.
They wouldn't even give us a quote because they have conflict of interest. So they've got the biggest Brownstein Barber shack, you know, they I forget the names, all these big names in D.C. And we're like, even if we wanted to try to play with the bigs, we can't. You know, so what you're looking at is what we got.
I will say that, you know, over the last number of months, you know, medical professionals, treatment specialists, parents, teachers, clergy, the Medical Society of New York, the PTAs, the law enforcement community here and in New Jersey and other places have come together to slow the train down and to have some real real wins and real successes, even though, you know, we're being outgunned. And those are people who really, they do care about people over profit, and that's where we all should be.
Sure.
Thank you.
Well, I think that's good enough to end on.
Yeah.
So I appreciate you coming out.
Thank you.
Thank you for the service you do to this community. You are doing wonderful. It is spectacular. I wish I had more time to stay here.
Appreciate that.
Thank you.
Glad we got to bring you here.
New business, old business? Anything?
Motion to adjourn?
Second?
Can't even
call the vote?
Oh, yeah.